Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Monday, March the 14th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. So much is going on. I cannot believe how many things are going on around the world. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. And as always, Bill, how's the weather in New York?
Well, I think it's okay. It looks sunny. I have not been outside for a while, as you know, because we've had a technical monstrosity here at Urgent Agenda, which I've had to attend to. But it looks okay. I think it's good enough weather to go out for ice cream.
Well, I think so. But we're having our weather. Let me just say our climate has been changing a lot here lately. One day it's nice. The other day it's cold. One day it's hot. So we're hoping that now that the baseball season is back, that we can finally have spring, even though I'm not exactly crazy with the way the baseball took off and then came back, but at least they're going to play Ballville.
Yeah, well, you know, there's got to be some good news somewhere. I mean, we'll look for it carefully, but we'll find it.
Well, here is an example of some really good news that we can enjoy before we get into all the nasty stuff. Frank Borman turns 94 today, so happy number 94 to Frank Borman. For those who may not recognize his name, he was one of the three legendary men on Apollo 8, the first time that we went around the moon. And I remember so much December 24th, 1968, going to midnight mass and coming home. By the way, midnight mass doesn't necessarily mean midnight, okay, for some non-Catholics. It used to be, but not so much anymore. But anyway, driving home with my parents, Bill, and listening to the radio and hearing these three men read from Genesis from up in space. I don't know if it was live. I'm not sure if it was a recording or the live transmission, but that was so cool to do that. I will always remember Frank Borman for that, Bill.
Absolutely, and it was exciting. You know, it's an interesting thing that nothing was more exciting in the 1960s than the space program. And we went to the moon, as President Kennedy promised, in 1969, July 20th. And then after that, it began to fade away. I remember when the movie The Right Stuff came out, which was a wonderful movie about the space program. In the early 80s, it was a complete flop. The young generation didn't want to know anything about it. And it's kind of been that way since. We very rarely hear a mention of it. During Obama's administration, he famously told the head of NASA that his job is Muslim outreach. I didn't think that was the job of NASA, but apparently I was misinformed. And also, by the way, and there's a side thing here that we really should mention. We have an astronaut in space right now who is dependent on Russian transportation to get him back to Earth. And he's on the International Space Station. We apparently don't have that capability anymore. I mean, we sold everything down the river. And there is a speculative article piece this morning saying that, in effect, he's a hostage of Russia. And they can use him as a hostage. Mm-hmm. It would be the first space hostage. But it is a serious issue. I think the space program will get back on track. Apparently, they're developing a new rocket right now, and they're going to return to the moon, or at least they plan to return to the moon. And then the Mars mission, which is definitely on the NASA schedule, if they're allowed to do it. You know, right. If you have the kind of know-nothing attitude that the Obama administration had, that it really wasn't very important at all, maybe we'll never go into space again. Who knows?
Well, I hope we do. I think you're right. It was very exciting. A lot of those times. I remember watching the Rockets. We were in school, and there was always a nice teacher who would put it on the television so we could watch it, Apollo 11. I remember watching that in summer school, actually. So it was all so exciting. I mean, it was such an exciting time. Now, of course, if we have men and women, and maybe that's I cannot say that anymore. Maybe if we have persons who go
persons,
to space,
yes.
Yeah, to go to space,
persons, yeah.
Maybe before they learn how to get to the moon, they're going to have training on pronouns, Bill.
Well, each one will have their own pronoun, and you know, we will respect that, and that person will have to understand that anything exciting that happens that requires a quote must include the pronouns. So, you know,
yeah.
It will be, there's one small step for a man, woman, his, her, is, but a great leap for a man, oops, suddenly a human,
right.
He, her, kind. I mean, that,
yes.
That sounds great, doesn't it? Sounds
well,
really
that
great.
Sounds very exciting. That
yes.
Just confirms that we're using all the resources properly. You
yes.
know, instead of focusing on getting to the moon, we're focusing on I don't know, satisfying a bunch of people down here who have some weird ideas of life. But you know,
yes.
one other funny thing that I wanted to mention, Bill. This is sort of serious, but not as serious as the stuff on the papers. And that's that our friend Beto O'Rourke is putting on quite a show down here. He
yes,
seems to be flipping on just about every issue.
Yes, that's right. You sent me an article on that. That he is flipping. He used to be in favor of critical race theory being taught in the schools. Now he's against it. You know what that does, though, is it first of all, it shows such contempt for the voter, because it's as if the voter doesn't remember what his position was the last time, and they always think they can get away with it. They never do. He just
right.
is absolutely ungenuine. I mean, just as he was ungenuine in taking on a Hispanic name and trying to use it as his real name, just for the purpose of attracting attention. And I can't imagine that Texas, especially in this year, would give up a governor like Greg Abbott for Beto O'Rourke.
No, I don't think they will. I don't think we will, I should say. I think the polls are confirming that. But it's just, when you do something like Beto is doing, you know, flipping on CRT, and then, of course, he said, no, I don't really want to take your gun away. Yeah, it was stuff like that where he's taking back some of the dumbest things that he said before. I think you lose with your own people, because he's not persuading me that he's now against critical race theory. But what about the people he needs to get out? Because he's going to need a big turnout this year. And, you know, his supporters may not be turned on by Beto suddenly flipping on these issues, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely true. Look, I think there was an article this morning that the head of one of the Democratic campaign committees, I think it was the one for the House, has said openly, the problem is with us. It's with the party. It's what the party has been doing. And, you know, I admire him for saying it, and I think it's the first step on the road to sanity, but I don't know if they have any sanity left to restore the Democratic Party. I mean, they are still a party under the control of the crazy left. They're the ones who seem to get all the spoils. We are in the midst now of a major international crisis, and I have not heard a single member of the political left in the Democratic Party give an expression of support to the people who are under attack. I mean, it tells you everything you need to know about them.
That's right. That's right. And we're not hearing too much from the vice president either. I mean, apparently she was giving a speech at that same conference you're talking about, where she
yes.
confused the I mean, I don't know whether she misread the teleprompter. I'm trying to be fair to her. But basically she said that Ukraine was a part of NATO. I mean, that's what it came across that
yeah,
way.
Yes, yeah. She doesn't know what she's saying. And you also get the feeling she's not very interested. There's no passion. There's no sense of involvement, no sense of outrage at what is happening in Ukraine. I think she is really a person who took this job or took this nomination so she could eventually get to be president, and nothing particularly interests her about the job.
Right. I have a theory too, Bill, and about that. And, you know, I guess everybody's a genius when it comes to speculation. But my speculation is that she took the job thinking that Biden would lose, and then that way she would be perfectly set up for the nomination.
Yes.
The next, because that's usually what happens. Whoever loses, you know, the losing vice president very often is in on track to be the nominee because, you know, they don't usually get blamed for losing like the candidate does. So that's, you know, that's my impression. But again, that's just pure speculation. But what you said about this man who spoke before the Democrats was that the Democrats come across as if they're more interested in stuff that people are not interested in. That's kind of the way I would translate what he said. You know, people are interested in gasoline prices, and they're talking about pronouns, you know, stuff like that.
Yes. Well, they are now an ideological party, and people are not interesting to them. What's interesting to them is ideas, and these ideas are not the ideas that the people who vote want to hear. They're not.
Right.
They really don't have an interest in introducing controversial racial ideas into schools. They don't have an interest in bashing the country. I've not seen a poll favorable to the Democrats in a long time. I did see one, and I can't recall which poll it was, matching Biden in 2024 against Trump, and it was dead even.
Right.
I don't think, though, that Biden can run in 2024. I can't imagine this man being put up for renomination or reelection.
Well, we certainly hope the First Lady has enough common sense that if he wants to do it, that she says, Joe, you cannot do it. You can barely do it now. Why would you want to try it at 2024? But you're right. It is a mess. They certainly come across that way. They almost come across like Justin Trudeau. That's what how they come across.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This little, you know, smarty little liberal who thinks he's smarter than anybody else. Bill, I was thinking about this morning, thinking about our podcast today, and thinking to myself, in 15 months, not even quite 15 months, 14 months, we've gone from $2 gasoline, $45 oil barrel, a border that was at least orderly, no inflation in the mix of shopping, in the shopping mix, and certainly no problems in Ukraine. I mean, there weren't any. You know, Putin always talked about this, but he never did it when Trump was in. And I guess the only conclusion, Bill, is that maybe Biden is just the unluckiest guy on the planet. You know, because the other conclusion, of course, is that he's projected weakness. But maybe that's too partisan to say that. But I've never seen a country change or the country change this quickly, so negatively in 14 months, 15 months. Maybe it happened before. Maybe when Lincoln took over the country in 1861 it happened. I don't know. But I haven't seen it in the last 50 years, Bill.
I think you're absolutely correct. I've seen it change positively. When Ronald Reagan was elected, there was an immediate positive feeling in the air that we were on a new course, and I think we were. But negatively, no. And I don't think he's unlucky. I think actually he's quite lucky that he inherited a country in relatively good shape, despite the pandemic that was ravaging us, but that was supposed to be a nonpartisan issue. But the very first things he did on the very first day in office, like canceling the Keystone Pipeline, restricting oil drilling in the United States, those were steps that hurt the country immediately, and now with the war in Ukraine, they've come back to haunt us. And it's one bad mistake after another, one bad nomination after another, and office holders, not so much at the cabinet level, but at the sub-cabinet level where the real work is done in these departments, obviously taking care of his radical base and taking care of them very carefully. And it is one thing after another that has gone wrong. We are in terrible shape as a country. I don't recall the last time we were in this kind of a condition where the people had lost confidence in the leadership.
That's the point, Bill. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's the point that, I mean, it's like the closest, I was thinking about this, the closest that I can equate to this was the last 12 months of President Carter, where you had the Iran hostage crisis, the Soviets go into Afghanistan, you have the unfortunate failure of that rescue attempt, you have an economy that was in shambles, you have a president who not too long before that gave a Malay speech, remember? It just seemed like with the Carter presidency, it was one thing after another. And
yes.
As I recall 1980, Bill, the country had pretty much given up on reelecting President Carter. I think the country had done, well, we don't want to reelect him, but they weren't really sure about President Reagan, and then or then Ronald Reagan. And then they had that debate a week before the election. The country sold Reagan, the country sold Carter, and said, we're going with Reagan. And all the projections of a tight election were over by 7 o'clock, Bill.
That's exactly right. And I think the country on the whole was very pleased with the result. The American people, I think, are a lot smarter than pundits think they are. You know, we have a punditry that is based primarily in Washington with the pundit branch offices in New York and Beverly Hills. And they believe that they know what's good for the country, and they think they know the country. They don't know the country. They really do not go out and talk to the American people. The American people tend to be better informed than they think. They tend to be wiser. They tend to be more thoughtful in their decisions. And I think the feelings of the people are now being explored and now being really registered somewhere in the American press, because I have noticed recently a bit of change in journalism. I think CNN has improved in the coverage of the war in Ukraine, a recognition that maybe the people out there have a lot to say, and they do have a lot to say. They said it very loudly in Virginia. And I think that they're very proud of what they did in Virginia. I think they are saying it all over the country with a number of issues. And I think that even the most hardened journalist realizes that they have to start listening to what the American people are saying.
Well, if they want to keep ratings.
Sure.
Because their ratings,
whatever ratings
are going.
They have.
Yeah, I mean, the ratings have collapsed. I mean, whoever watches CNN must be, not even people at airports are watching CNN these days. But it's just crazy to me how things have changed so rapidly.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, from one, you know, it seems like one crisis to another. And, it's like I don't even know where to begin sometimes. But you said something. I just wanted to quickly follow up on it. You said the American people are smarter than these so-called experts give them credit for. And I think, for example, the reaction of the American people to the gasoline crisis is a confirmation of that, Bill. Americans
yes.
are telling pollsters by 80% margin, so that means a lot of Democrats are voting yes. They're saying, why are we buying oil from other countries when we've got it here in Texas, when we've got it in Alaska? We can pull it out cleanly. I mean, we can do this. We've done it before. And so Americans are smart. They're saying, hey, why are we depending on other countries? We've got everything here. Why don't we drill here, take care of our needs, and then and basically what they're saying is, not exactly, but what they're saying is, go back to the Trump energy policy, because that was
yes.
working
mm-hmm.
pretty well, Bill.
That is, and I think that feeling would even be stronger if Trump were a more popular figure and not as divisive a figure. It's that personality that's holding him back right now. But I think you're absolutely right. People see that they had a better life, that the country was better run, and that the world took us seriously. Now they see that the country is very poorly run, and the world is not taking us seriously. We are losing our world leadership as we speak, because no one is looking toward the United States right now to lead them through this catastrophe in Ukraine, because the record of the administration includes Afghanistan, and Afghanistan was such a complete disaster. I think people now expect that everything will be Afghanistan, and that is not good news for Joe Biden.
No, and something else that just came over the wire that I'm looking at is that the Republicans in the Senate have pretty much said, we're not buying this Iran deal that you're doing. And you need to submit it to the Senate for a treaty, which is what he should do anyway. So, I mean, this Iran thing, the idea that we are sitting talking at a table talking to Russia and China and Iran when
yes.
the Iranians just shot some missiles to one of our consulates in Iraq. And I was watching the Secretary Adams, the lady, I guess, undersecretary on Sunday morning saying, well, we don't think they were shooting at us. Well... Okay, I mean,
okay.
Okay. Is that crazy or what, Bill?
Well, that's what people are saying. I mean, if you notice the tone of comment, it's everything we're doing is absurd. I mean, now David Petraeus was on today defending the administration and explaining to us why it's a good idea that he's not a general anymore, saying, well, you know, you have to do these things. I mean, you got to get the oil and you got to get this and you got to get that. Well, you know, when you start talking in those terms, the word loser comes to mind, that we are losers right now. We're losing everywhere, as we were during the Obama administration. I mean, the Russians are literally in command of our responses in Ukraine, and you have a situation where, as you said, we're negotiating the Iran deal, but we're not negotiating it. The Iranians actually will not sit down to talk to us. We are begging, as this administration usually does, and allowing the Russians to negotiate the completion of the deal. Now, how crazy is that when we are watching the Russians, those very same Russians, tear up in the most brutal manner a sovereign country? And the Iran nuclear deal, if the details that have been released surreptitiously are correct, the Iran nuclear deal will be even worse than the one signed in 2015, and that we're headed basically for another humiliating moment. And the American people can't take much more humiliation because they're getting an awful lot of it.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, there's, as I say, the only – this is reminiscent of the summer of 1980. That's what it reminds me of. I remember having these these feelings that you just expressed. I remember having them in the summer of 1980 when everybody was saying this election cannot get here quickly enough. But again, I was watching this lady on television yesterday, and then, you know, they asked her about these missiles being fired near the consulate, the American consulate, and she says, well, we don't think they were firing at us. Well, the next time somebody comes by your house and shoots in your house, I guess you can say they weren't shooting at you. They had
the wrong
house.
They had the wrong address.
Well, that doesn't do anything. There wasn't anybody killed. There was nobody killed at this attack. But when you shoot missiles that close to an American base or consulate, we got to do something about that. We got to go out and take out wherever those missiles came from, Bill.
Well, I fully agree with you. You know, President Trump was on last night explaining something that he did when he was president, when the Russians, having been invited back into the Middle East by the Obama administration, because there were no Russians in the Middle East before the Obama administration. It's amazing, all their list of accomplishments. And that they set up a base in Syria, and it was compromising our operations in the region. And so President Trump, as he described it last night, fired 60 Tomahawk missiles at that base. And it followed some outrageous action by Russia. The base was largely destroyed. And he said then that he called President Putin and said, don't do this again. And that was the entire message. And during the Trump administration, the Russians did not do that again. They did not take any aggressive action. Now they have a new president who seems to have exactly the opposite policies from Trump, and the Russians, I dare say, while they're having a tough time in Ukraine, they are once again asserting their power and asserting their willingness to use it, and that's what's frightening about it.
That's right. Well, we're going to take a little break, Bill, but before we go, I just thought, I think you heard about this, that Elon Musk, you know, the electric car builder, that he's challenging Putin to a duel. That's got to be the craziest thing I've ever heard. You know, where, you know, we have an industrialist in the United States challenging the president of Russia to a duel, and whoever wins keeps Ukraine. So if that doesn't tell you how crazy things are, I don't know what does, Bill.
Well, it's crazy is not good. And when the American people think that, or at least a large number of political observers think that we're headed on such a dramatically bad path, that's not a moment to be happy about. This country right now is very vulnerable. If Russia feels we're really weak and if Putin needs a boost in popularity, he may take a chunk or try to take a chunk of NATO countries up north. What would we do? I mean, right. And are the American people in the mood for another war? Another thing that can happen, we've talked about this before, is that our indecisiveness, our weakness, is being noticed in China, mm-hmm. which has very definite designs on some territory in the Pacific Ocean. Will they now move on that territory? I'm referring, of course, to Taiwan. Will they now say, this is the right moment for us to have our country back? You never know. Weakness leads to war. It also leads to confusion. Neither of them are very good.
That's right. No, you're exactly right about that. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill Katz right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, during this little break that we had, I saw a flash. This has to do with Texas, not national. That Beto O'Rourke is now saying that he's going to buy back your AR-15. So if you have an AR-15, Beto will buy it. Or he'll get the legislature, I guess, to create that program. So I guess that's what his campaign is down to. These days, an absolute, it's a clown show. That's what his campaign is.
And that's exactly right. It's a man who wants to be governor just to be governor.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about the vice president, Bill. She didn't have a great trip to Europe. Again, when she speaks, she comes across as someone who's extremely uncomfortable in that position. And I keep going back and forth. Am I being fair? Am I being partisan? Am I being unfair? But she is the vice president, and she could be in the job at any minute, given reality. I mean, the president could pass away or whatever. And if the country is not comfortable with Joe Biden, I don't think they can be very comfortable with what we've seen of the vice president here lately, Bill.
Well, it's, you know, the term vice president doesn't fit her. You know, we've had vice presidents who have kind of been obscure. We've had vice presidents who were kind of, I think Nelson Rockefeller referred to the office as standby equipment. But this vice president is baffling. I think she does not have the confidence of the American people. And with a president who is clearly impaired, she is, if they could get her out of office, you know, the committee could go to her and say, Kamala, it just ain't happening. And, you know, give her a Supreme Court appointment or something like that, which is usually where they put people like that, and bring in a much stronger person. The administration would be stronger all around. But I think that's a very unrealistic prospect.
Yeah. Well, we don't have that tradition, I guess. This is
yes.
That's what I think holds everything back. We don't have the tradition of people resigning or, as you say, you know, changing one job for the other. I mean, I think the Supreme Court would have been probably the best time to put her in there and get another vice president. But we don't have that tradition in the United States, and I think politically maybe it would have been very difficult. Bill, there's a lot of talk about a no-fly zone, and, you know, I guess a lot depends in – the devil is always in the details, as they say. I personally do not support a no-fly zone. That's my opinion. Because I think that when you put American pilots and Russian pilots close to each other, some bad things can happen. So at the moment, I don't support one. Now, if he goes into Poland or something, that's a different game. But right now, it's all about Ukraine. I don't support a no-fly zone. Do you have any thoughts on that, on a no-fly zone, Bill?
You know, I actually don't have authoritative thoughts. I don't know that much about the subject. Apparently, the feeling in Washington is that a no-fly zone puts American planes in direct competition with Russian planes, because the Russians are attacking in Ukraine, and our job in a no-fly zone would be to enforce an area over Ukraine in which hostile aircraft cannot fly. And the feeling is this could start the Third World War. Although I doubt it, I tend to think that it could be handled. But I think that is the feeling, and they just don't want to risk lighting that spark.
Yeah.
But I have no idea. I would have to hear literally opinions from both sides and carefully crafted opinions. If we could get a no-fly zone over Ukraine, obviously it would be much better for the Ukrainians. But it is true that watching out for the risk is also a perfectly reasonable position to take.
Well, General Petraeus, you mentioned him a few minutes ago. He was on TV recently, and he's against it. And he is against it because, or at least when I saw him a couple of days ago, he was saying that it's an act of war. And one of the realities is whatever you paint the airplane, whether it's an airplane with a NATO sign on it or whatever, more than likely the pilots are going to be Americans because that's who has the most planes and pilots. And so you are going to have Russians and Americans fight each other. And the one argument is, well, let it happen because the Soviet or the Russian military is doing so poorly that you could break their back and have Putin be overthrown. That's kind of the optimistic view. The other view, I guess, is what I share, is that, yeah, but you're risking a war that I don't think any American at this moment wants to have, Bill. I don't know of anybody who wants to send their son to fight over Ukraine, Bill.
That's the point. I mean, people are very, very sympathetic to the Ukrainians. They feel horrible about it. But look, and of course, they admire the president of Ukraine immensely. He comes out of this a far larger figure than Joe Biden will ever be. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're saying, you know, we're not obligated by treaty to help Ukraine. And if we go too far and get involved, it could wind up as another Afghanistan, another Vietnam, and they're just not interested in doing that.
No, you're right. And no one has explained to the American people. I mean, I know that the president has said a few things, but it would be nice. We mentioned it last week. We'll repeat it again this week. I think it would be nice if President Biden spoke to the nation at 9 o'clock, not at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but at 9 o'clock Eastern time, and delivered a speech explaining what Ukraine is all about, why it matters, and you know, just explain his position. I don't want to hear it from the secretary of or the press secretary. I want to hear it from the president of the United States, Bill.
I fully agree with you. I think he has not been in communication with the American people, and he has not chosen to adopt a leadership style. I remember the phrase they used during the administration in which he served as vice president, which was the Obama administration, that the phrase they liked to use was, we are leading from behind. Well, by definition, you can't lead from behind. I mean, leaders are up front. And again, they seem to be leading from behind. We don't hear much from the president. We hear a bit more from some of the members of his cabinet, but that's not good enough. If this were a parliamentary democracy, as the kind they have in Europe, it is quite possible the president would have been removed from office by now for botching things,
right.
Because they have what they call the vote of no confidence, and when you lose a vote of no confidence in many of the countries, not all, you're expected to leave and you know, go out in the pasture somewhere. But I think that the country, in a way, is being led by the press. And I'm very critical of the press in most cases. But I think that the journalism I've seen coming out of Ukraine has been good. I give credit where it's due. And I think they have taken this very seriously. They have not looked at it as an opportunity to bash Trump. And I think that, you know, if more and more Americans go to a house of worship, they might be better informed,
right,
you know, as to what is actually happening.
Yeah. Well, I think the and this is maybe a partisan opinion on from me, but I think the reason that it's getting harder and harder to bash Trump is for the comparison that we started the show with, the 15 months. I mean,
yes,
there is
right.
No objective way that you could look at the United States today and say that we're better off under Biden than under Trump. There's no objective way you can do that. Now, if you hate Trump, if you have an obsession against Trump, then I guess nothing will change. But reasonable people, those independents in the middle who probably changed, moved to Biden because they thought they didn't like Trump's personality or whatever, I mean, those people are looking at this thing. They're saying, we made the wrong choice. We didn't like his tweets,
yes,
but we don't like his foreign policy.
Well, that's right. And remember that it was Ronald Reagan's famous question that played such an important role in his political victories. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And that was exactly the question he asked. And the American people decided that under Jimmy Carter, they weren't better off. They were worse off. So that is, it, ultimately it does come down to the American family and what the American family thinks and feels and what the American family believes. And the president, except for his condemnation verbally of Russia, is losing the information war. It is not the president we look to for information or for guidance.
Right. No, you're right about that. I mean, it seems like the best fellow when it comes to information is the president of Ukraine, who seems,
yes,
to be everywhere all the time, gaining more and more friends, Bill. I understand he's going to be speaking to the U.S. Congress, obviously a virtual speech, but, I mean, that's amazing. I've never seen that before either, Bill.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. What you say is accurate. One of the great things about Roosevelt was that he knew how to talk to the American people. Whether you agreed with his policies or not, Doris Kearns Goodwin once wrote that you could walk down the street in the United States, any street, if the president was on giving a fireside chat, and listen to the whole speech by walking down the street and just listening to it through windows. Every radio was on. People waited for the president. They had a feeling that he was going to attempt to guide them, and that he informed them. His speeches were very, very informative. Now, one, of course, could disagree with the policies, but he was a master of relating to the public, and we don't have a master today. We don't have it certainly in the president, and we don't have it in the vice president. There is just a void, as if the administration considers itself better than the American people and that the American people are not worthy.
Right.
That is the impression they give,
Yeah, they're not worthy of an explanation. And
that's
they
right.
need to remember that it's their sons who are going to have to go out and fight. And you sure have to explain it to the sons or to the parents of these sons why they should go out and fight. And right now they're not doing that. I think it's absolutely appalling. Well, another failure, communication or message failure of the administration, Bill, is gasoline prices.
Yes.
They're out there saying that, oh, it's because of Ukraine. And again, they're insulting the intelligence of the American people. The price of gasoline had gone from $2 to $3.50 before the troops went into Ukraine.
That's right.
Even if the price had stopped at $3.50, that's still a pretty big jump from $2 to $3.50. That's a big jump.
We're paying $4.50 here. And,
$4.09 is what we're paying here.
Yes, and you're quite right that the prices were going up before Ukraine, but one of the commentators said that now everything that goes wrong is going to be in Vladimir Putin, and they're going to try to sell that line to the American people. And I don't think so. The American people remember when we were energy independent. They remember when we did not have a major war around us, and Trump's strength and the fact that he was feared played an important role in that. But now Vladimir Putin has stepped forward as the fall guy and the guy who will win the next election for the Democrats. And I think that's exactly the way the Democrats look at it.
Well, I think they're going to be in for a big surprise because the reaction of the public is not – I think you have a post about this, in fact, today, Bill. Your lead post is about the way people are reacting – not just to the Biden administration, but to the gasoline prices.
Yes.
And I the other day, I was at the gas station, and you could hear people, kind of murmuring, about the gasoline prices. And I don't remember hearing Putin in any of the comments they were making, Bill.
No, I think that this price squeeze comes at the same time as a massive inflation in other areas of the economy. So they are on their way to the supermarket. They stop off for gas and get hit once and are reminded of how bad it is. Then they go to the supermarket and realize that between the time you went on Monday and the time you returned to the supermarket on Friday, prices have gone up 25%. So they're being hit from every side. And it is something that he cannot explain away by simply blaming Putin.
Right, and it isn't even if you buy a bag of Fritos or Doritos, they've reduced the number of chips to keep the price the same price. So they lower the quantity of chips. They make it a smaller supply to keep the price the same as before. People are not stupid. They realize stuff like that. But it's just that what concerns me, Bill, is that we really have not seen the big punch of inflation, because when 30% of anything, as I understand, I was listening to a transportation analyst the other day, and he was saying that 30% of the price of anything you buy is related to transportation. And the price of gasoline is now going up again, which means that there are further increases coming down the road. And the prices we will pay in 30 days or 60 days are going to be higher than these. And I honestly don't know how people are going to be able to make ends meet. Something has to give. When
That's
you have
absolutely
a
correct.
You know, when you have a family budget and you only have so much money, and you've allocated money for this, something has to give. So you have to give up something in your purchases. You know, it's easy to give up a vacation. It's easy to give up buying a new car. I mean, that's easy, or maybe getting a new pair of shoes. That's easy to give up. But not buying food for your kids, Bill.
Well, that's it. And remember that many people in America have kids who are teenagers and who would like to go to college, and they're seeing that dream may be out of sight. It may be beyond the ability of the family. And that will also turn the American people against the president. But the cost of living has wiped out, as I understand it statistically, all the gains that American workers have made in wage gains in the last few years. So in other words, they haven't made any wage gains at all.
No, and I mean, I talk to families, I talk to neighbors, I talk to friends, and everybody's hurting. I mean, this is really hitting people right between the eyes. I know personally, my wife and I go out to eat. Thankfully, you know, we're doing okay, but we go out to eat, and every time we go out to eat, it's more expensive. Same restaurant costs more.
That's right.
Just this weekend, Bill, I had an experience. I went to get a haircut. It went up.
Yes.
I stopped by, you know, a couple of places to buy some things. Everything is up. And I was talking to my friend who owns a printing shop, and we were talking about this, and he says, you know, I've got to raise prices, but I don't know how much further I can raise them without going out of business, because at some point they're not going to come to my business. They're not going to buy, you know, the copies. They're not going to make the copies. They're not going to buy the notebooks or whatever that I sell. So that's the fear. I mean, that's what we saw back in 1982.
That's
when
right.
With the recession came after all the price increases, Bill.
Well, absolutely. And it was a deep recession. And there was some concern, as you remember, that Reagan might not get reelected because of it. Now, fortunately, it eased a bit in time for the 1984 election, in which he ran against Walter Mondale. But Mondale was also such a weak candidate that Reagan was able to overcome any doubts. And, of course, he went on to increasing popularity. But you have a situation today, I think, where people look around and they can't find any good news. Even in the sports world, the Olympics were a great flop. They had an
right.
audience of three people, each one of whom was given a snowsuit. I mean, I think the biggest news in sports in recent times that anyone is interested in is the fact that Tom Brady has decided to go back and play football again next year.
Right.
I mean,
and there's all kinds of jokes about that he has to
yes.
go back and work again because of inflation. So
well,
people
right.
even, you know, people even tie that to to the inflation that his wife looked at him and said, look, everything is up. You got to go back to work. And he said, well, the only place I can make that kind of money is playing. Of course, that's a joke, obviously. That's not, I mean, I'm sure that's not why he doesn't need the money. I'm sure he's not going back because of the money. But those are the jokes that are going around. Bill, I got a couple of other things I wanted to ask you. China and Taiwan, you touched on it before. I was listening to the administration, this lady Adams, yesterday. I can't think of her first name, but she's Undersecretary Adams. I think that's her. I think it's Nancy Adams, whatever. And she was asked a question about Taiwan and China, and she said, well, I think we have shown the world how united we are in Ukraine, and the Chinese would face the same kind of world unity. And I'm a little skeptical about that because I don't think we're that united when it comes to NATO at the moment, Bill.
No, we're only united in saying to the Russians, you're a bad boy. That's basically as far as the uniting goes, because nobody is actually doing anything that serious to help the Iranians. And that's exactly the feeling of the people of Taiwan are going to have if the Chinese mainland government decides to go against them, that we will send them greetings, we will move some ships around, the Europeans will express their anguish, which they do very well, and that'll be it. And we'll be told, well, in the end, you're not strong enough to fight the Chinese, that you're too far from home. Why don't you concentrate on something else? There's a point where you get used to being defeated. Daniel Patrick Moynihan called it defining deviancy down. When you notice there's something wrong in the society, but instead of doing something about it, you get used to it. Yeah. And that becomes, in effect, the new normal. And I fear that may be happening in many parts of the United States.
That's right. It's interesting how inflation, getting back to inflation for a moment, I was listening to a business report about an hour before a podcast, and there was somebody from the car industry was talking about how the price of cars, and not just cars, but like automobile parts and so on, is going to have to go up because apparently this crisis in Ukraine is impacting the price of metal. Sometimes we don't connect these things, but not only
That's
is Ukraine
right.
affecting the price of metal, but it's also it's going to have an impact on the price of wheat because they export a lot of wheat. And all of these things that you never thought about before, globalization was this perfect little mechanism that we had devised, and now all of a sudden, I think a lot of people are saying, man, we need this. We got to think twice about globalization. We got to develop our own oil, develop our own food, and then we'll do globalization after we take care of ourselves, Bill.
Yes, and that will take the public understanding, with, I hope, the help of responsible political leaders, that global warming is not going to kill civilization in the next 5 minutes. I mean, the stuff that comes out of the climate change people that, we're going to have the near end of the world in 14 years. I think AOC of the Bronx said that some months back, that we only had 14 years to correct our climate errors. And the more they say that, the worse it gets for them.
Right. Well, I think we've already exhausted one of her 12 years. So we've got 11 to go, Bill. So we've got 11 more years of podcasts. Just remember that before we all melt to death, I guess, in the global warming debacle. One question I wanted to ask you, Bill, as we wrap up. I have been following the situation in New York City a lot because, it's a big city, obviously, the most important city, and because of Mayor Adams. And I don't know. I'm not that excited about Mayor Adams anymore. What are they saying there?
Well, they're not saying that much because it is now, we're approaching April in New York. He has been in office since the first of the year, and people don't see any result. They don't see any dramatic action. He is endorsing good actions by the police. He's endorsing a change in procedure to crack down on crime, which clearly has become the biggest issue in New York, but not with apparently with great enthusiasm and not with great effect. There are people who are being released from prison in New York right now, every week, who are going to the microphones of the press and bragging about how they got away with it because of Democratic Party policies. And
yeah.
that is something that, if that goes on, that the Mayor Adams will become a laughingstock. And this happened to his predecessor, David Dinkins, who was the country's first black mayor and a very decent man. But after a while, instead of referring to him as the mayor who happens to be black, the people of the city were referring to him as the black mayor because he only seemed to represent that constituency. So I think Adams is in a lot of trouble right now, but with the potential to get back goodwill. But he is going to have to show some victory over crime, some advance that he can take to the people of New York.
Well, there's so many. I suppose, you know, he could have done some quick things, you know. It's obviously a complicated problem, but he could have done some quick things to maybe show more support for the police,
yes.
maybe, you know, maybe make one big statement, you know, arrest a bunch of people or something just to make a big statement. But he hasn't done that, and I think he only has so much time before he loses. I mean, look, the city of New York is losing people. The state of New York is
yes.
losing
oh.
people.
Well, there was a big article about that just last week, that it is losing people, and that the reason most people gave for leaving New York, it wasn't even crime. It was the fact that the economy was impossible here. Prices keep going up, 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 and up. The state taxes are among the highest in the country, and there's no result. There's no other side.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, I hear that from New York all the time, and it's a shame because I was optimistic about Mayor Adams. I thought he would be able to turn this around not only in New York, but I was actually optimistic about the impact that a guy like Mayor Adams could have on the Democrat Party, you know, that the Democrat Party would finally realize that, you know, that it's people like Mayor Adams or talking like he was as a candidate who are going to save the party, not this defund the police crowd that has become so vocal in their party. Well, Bill, I want to thank you once again for joining us. The baseball season is back, and a lot of people are, I guess, happy or not happy about that. I'm happy because baseball is back, but I don't like the way they've taken the game. You know, it used to be that, well, when you remember baseball, you know, only two teams got into the postseason. And now
this new arrangement,
12 teams are getting
yes.
into the postseason. I just think that makes the postseason too long. And
yes.
by the time they
and
get to the World Series, I mean...
You're not even interested anymore.
Well, sure, because it's another postseason game. It's supposed to
yes.
be the World Series, and it's just another postseason game. So I that's the part I don't like. The fact that in order to make an agreement, the owners had to consent to that. And I don't like it, but, you know.
Well,
I guess I'm in a minority, I figure.
It's become a big money game. When I was a kid, it wasn't a big money game. Yes, of course, the teams wanted to make a profit, but now it's become basically a clash more of lawyers than of baseball players.
Well, something else, too, that has happened, and you might be able to relate to this because of your Brooklyn Dodgers history. The owners who had these teams until recently were generally families and people who really respected and loved the game. Now the owners are basically corporations, business people who invest for the money, and I think there's a different result. You know, I remember when Calvin Griffith was the owner of the Minnesota Twins. Well, people could say whatever they want about Calvin Griffith, but he loved the game. He
yes.
understood the history of the game. He inherited the team from his father,
and that's
so
what
on.
You need. That's what
and,
you need. You need that passion.
Yeah, that's it. They love
but,
the game. And now,
but
you know, you look at some of the owners, and they're just people looking for a return on investment.
That's right. And it's very hard to get to root for a baseball player who gets $26,000 every time he goes to bat. I mean, that's not a sports contest anymore. That's the stock market.
Well, that, I guess that's about $9,000 a pitch.
Right, yes.
If you're making that kind of money. But I mean, I'm not against the money. It's not that I hate for the players to make money. I just wish that the ownership would love the game as much as I do, maybe. That's what it, and maybe that's unrealistic. But I felt that at one time they did. And I guess
yes.
they don't anymore.
No, I really don't think they do.
No, I think it's all about return on investment, which is fine. You know, it's okay. But when you are diluting the product the way they're doing it, it just makes me sick. Well, Bill, thank you as always for your time. And have a wonderful week, and we'll keep an eye on Urgent Agenda this week again.
Well, thank you. And we'll
talk about it.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.